Okay, so I am the sole Bostonian on this panel, and I'm sandwiched in between two Southerners with very beautiful accents, so I apologize for mine up front. It's not going to be as entertaining as theirs. And so, again, I disclose that I don't have any personal financial relationships or commercial interests that are relevant to this presentation. So Partners Healthcare, for those of you who don't know, is a hospital system that includes Mass General Hospital and Brigham and Women's Hospitals here in Boston, and a network of community hospitals and post-acute facilities as well. Just to say a few words about the Massachusetts health reform law, we were in 2006 in a situation where most of the other states are now, in a situation where we had a lot of uninsured residents and a lot of newly eligible groups to reach out to. So as with the ACA in 2006, when we passed our own health reform law, there were some responses that we as healthcare providers really needed to take. Some of those things were required. Some of them were things that we as a system undertook to really optimize the impact of the law. And so this is sort of a laundry list of areas where we focused our energy. And I'm not going to go deep into any of these areas. I'm going to sort of touch on each and the work that we did in each area. This is really more of a blueprint or framework for healthcare providers in thinking about the ACA as it rolls out and thinking about the different areas of operations that will be impacted. So just a quick word, and Dr. Brandon touched on this, the ACA was modeled after what we had here in Massachusetts. However, there are some pretty big differences. We had more generous subsidies here in Massachusetts than the ACA provides for help in purchasing coverage. The ACA actually goes up to a higher income eligibility level than we did here in Massachusetts. The ACA, the help that you get under the ACA for purchasing insurance is in the form of an advanced premium tax credit. We didn't do that route in Massachusetts. We provided direct subsidies to the health plan. So there's unfortunately some pretty major differences here. And we did, Massachusetts sort of did go to the feds and say, look, we did this. We want to keep our structure. And unfortunately, we had to be ACA compliant in our exchange and in our subsidy provision if we wanted to get the federal dollars. So in Massachusetts, what we have now is a real reshuffling of people, not a lot of newly eligible people, although there will be some, but it's really a reshuffling among groups in order for the state to draw down federal dollars and to be compliant under the ACA. And for all of us, I think this is a challenge, because I think a lot of people in Massachusetts are sort of sleeping through this, thinking that they don't need to do anything, and it's been a real challenge in communications, having to convince people, look, we have to pay attention all over again. And in fact, it's a little more complicated here because we have to fit what we already did into the federal structure. And I would say, in response to Dr. Brandon's question about Rhode Island, we didn't want them. We have enough to do without having a whole other state in our connector. There really is a lot to do here in Massachusetts, and that's probably why we didn't reach out to any neighboring states. So I broke this arbitrarily into sort of required responses and optional responses, although I would argue that all of these things are really things that you should do as a healthcare provider to really make the ACA work and work well. So the first thing, obviously, is hospitals and healthcare providers are employers as well, and so we have a set of requirements under the ACA, and we had a set of requirements under Chapter 58. This was something our HR department really led the efforts on, and it included things like we have under the ACA. There's the requirement that all employers notify all employees about the existence of marketplaces as part of the ACA requirements. A big piece of our responsibility and our response was around contracting. And so in 2006, there were a lot of new health plans, not a lot, a few new players in Massachusetts. I suspect there's some new players in some of your states as well. This was a very, very quick time frame. It was quick in 2006. It was even more quick. under the ACA, we literally in Massachusetts found out which plans were in the mix and certified by the state in mid-September for the October 1st open enrollment. So our hospital system is primarily in Eastern Mass, but we are in different regions, and different regions have different plan offerings. And so we are literally still finishing contracting negotiations, despite the fact that we're now in open enrollment for January 1st. So this is the area I think is probably the most important, and that is helping our patients enroll in the new coverage options. And so we have always had a team of patient financial counselors across our sites. So we have about 100 of them. Our system is very big, and so some hospitals like Mass General have 15 to 20 staff. Some health centers have one or two, so it really varies on the volume. But these are individuals who report up through the entity CFOs, and they are charged with being the front lines of health reform. They were in 2006. They will be again now. And they, you know, when I talk to hospitals around the country about health reform, I find that a lot of hospitals don't have these staff people. And I suspect that's because a lot of states haven't had very generous Medicaid programs. There hasn't really been much to do for these people. And there are, in many states, were outstationed Medicaid workers in hospitals and health centers as well. But this has really been the core of the way that we've gotten our patients onto coverage and the way we've ended up getting reimbursed for patients who were previously uninsured. This is a huge effort. These folks have to become certified application counselors under the ACA. We're in the middle of that now. The state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, is working hard to provide training and regular technical assistance. But we also had to take our system here in Massachusetts. We had a form of an exchange, the Health Connector, and we had one-stop shopping, but we had to turn that into something that was ACA compliant. And so in all the ways that Dr. Brandon talked about, it needed to be public-facing, it needed to be real-time eligibility, it needs to be the soup-to-nuts application from eligibility to all the way over to picking a PCP and a plan. And so this has been a huge lift for us, and it's something that I think we haven't had as many glitches, I would say, as there have been on the federal level, but we've had a few. The state is working very hard day and night to try and address our concerns and make sure that this system works for people applying at home as well as for people applying in hospitals and health centers with our staff. The 501R, IRS 501R regulation is certainly a new requirement for charitable hospitals related to community health needs assessment and financial assistance policies. In Massachusetts, we already did community health needs assessments out of our hospitals. I would say the new requirements here are really around transparency, around building an implementation plan on the needs assessment results that is available and accessible online, available to the community, public availability of the needs assessment, the financial assistance policies, same things. We provided financial assistance, but the new requirements aren't so much around what we have to do as a hospital, but around how we communicate it. And so we are really viewing this as a campaign to get the word out about the financial assistance we provide, to make sure that communities in areas that we serve know about the financial assistance options, that there's plain language materials, materials in other languages, et cetera. So these are really the new requirements under the ACA in these areas. So the next set of slides are really more optional, although I would argue that they are also needed. At the time of health reform, really grappled with how we were going to organize this work. There was so much to do. I've talked about some of the required areas. Those things fell pretty naturally under different departments like HR. But then there were things like communications and different operational responses where we really pulled ad hoc work groups and hospital-level committees together to try and address these different areas. Staff communications is probably the biggest challenge, and I would say a continual need. We passed our health reform in 2006. until, I would say, the summer, I was still going out regularly educating practice staff and case managers and social workers about the programs. There's staff turnover, but there's also just so much confusion out there about the state programs and how they interact and who gets what and who's eligible for this and that. So this is going to be a continual thing, and I think Dr. Brandon alluded to that. The communications and the education around, how to serve patients on these programs, which programs cover which benefits, what post-acute benefits there are, how do patients access them. We've always in Massachusetts had a very generous system of state coverage programs, but it has been a bit fragmented, and it's a good thing. I used to work in Louisiana where we had one program, and it was for people very, very poor. That was an easier job, but here, luckily, we have some generous programs, but it does create this continuous need for education of staff. We did a variety of things to educate staff, and we'll do this again. We're already doing a lot of these things. The patient financial counselors are really the front lines, and so we're having weekly calls with them. We did two-hour trainings with them on the new landscape. We're getting out to any staff meetings and things we can. We're doing newsletters. We're doing anything you can think of to try and get the word out. And this is just internally. I'm not even talking about patients. Patients are a little more complicated. Patient education is a little more complicated under the ACA. And I think, I'm not sure if this is unique to Massachusetts, but here we have, as I said, sort of a reshuffling of people into different buckets based on their income level, based on their immigration status. They're not easily identifiable to us. So trying to come up with messages that really resonate with the broad patient population we serve, yet are specific enough to give people an action step that's meaningful, has been really, really challenging. And this sort of keeps me up at night worrying about this, that we're going to have a bunch of uninsured people showing up on January 1st. The state, I should say, is really doing an outstanding job of outreach. They know who everyone is and where they're moving. They're doing outbound phone calls to each person who has to reapply under the new system for January 1st. They are really, we're having to rely on them a lot, and we're having to sort of push them to remind them that it's important for them to include messages around checking your provider network, making sure your PCP is in one of the new plans when you make that decision. As Dr. Brandon said, that decision is very complicated, and so we're struggling with how to help patients best. This is a real lesson learned, I think, from 2006 here in Massachusetts. There were things we just did not foresee happening. Gaps in between programs, coverage starting on the first of the month, but patient is still on this Medicaid program in the interim, and that doesn't cover this, and we didn't get a prior auth for that, et cetera, et cetera. So I think over time there was a lot of this, and this took years for these sort of patient situations to emerge, and we spent a lot of time working at the state level, providing feedback to state agencies to try and resolve and fix some of those little situations that were occurring. We did advocacy. We have a statewide health reform consumer advocacy coalition here in Massachusetts. We also have our state hospital association, and so we continue to do this. We continue to have a two-way communication with the state agencies on some of these programs. There was also areas where we had to develop new policies. For example, if someone comes in during a gap period and yet they're scheduled to be active on the first of the month, do we delay elective care, for example? Lots of areas really emerged over time that require new policies, access policies. The financial impact, I'm not going to talk about what the financial impact was, but what we did was we tracked payer mix changes over time, and this took, I would say, 3 years of tracking before the levels sort of plateaued. So we saw drops in uninsured and rises in insured probably right up until 2009, and then, of course, the recession hit and sort of skewed a lot of the payer mix data. The revenue, we did see, some increases in reimbursement due to newly insured people. We continue to have public payer losses, though, and there was a commitment under the health reform law in Massachusetts to raise Medicaid rates, which have actually just started to come up this year And so this is a sort of complicated picture. The revenue picture is complicated and depends a lot on the different plans and the reimbursement and the contracting, obviously. Community outreach is an area that I would really love to do more of. I'm so busy doing staff education internally for our patients that it's hard to get out and do community outreach. We do rely a lot on our community programs and program staff to reach out into the communities we serve and to try and get the word out. There's, as Dr. Brandon mentioned, there's the navigators who do a lot of this. We have 10 of those in Massachusetts, and we try and concentrate our efforts in areas where the navigators are not present. And just to sum up, I think more than lessons learned, this slide is really more about what you can expect. I think probably most importantly, I would say to watch for these emerging gaps in coverage, because they will sort of come out over time, and they will be things that you can work with your states on to try and resolve. The added complexity here is I really can't say enough about. It's been very challenging to communicate this to staff, and I'm going out to do the same presentation over and over and over, sometimes to the same groups. I think they need to hear it more than once, and it's going to be a continual need. We have in Massachusetts shifted over time to from enrolling patients who needed coverage to helping them maintain coverage, and I think that's a great place to be if you can get to the point in your states where the uninsured rate is lower and you're helping patients stay covered. That's a good thing, but it does take a bit of a shift in thinking, identifying patients before their annual redetermination is up, and doing outreach in a slightly different way. And then, of course, we did see the predictable increase in volume of patients seeking primary care providers, and I think that will be a challenge across the nation as well. Thank you.